Hello, this is Jim McKeith, and welcome to another episode of the podcast at Delphi.org. In today's episode, I talked to Darren Kosinski about his role as part of the R&D team. First, I want to try something new by introducing a little technical content in the podcast. Let me know what you think in the comments. So XC7 introduced the new Parallel Programming Library, or PPL. It includes a self-tuning thread pool with support for tasks, futures, parallel for loops, and more. So if you don't know, tasks are a simple, lightweight way to execute code in the thread pool. So you don't have to worry about managing threads. You just create a task and execute it in the thread pool. And then the thread pool handles which threads get assigned to, how many threads to create, and so on and so forth, based on your CPU architecture. Futures are tasks that return a value, making it easy to calculate values asynchronously and then know they'll be available when you need them. And then parallel for loops execute a task for each iteration over a range of values. So like a regular for loop, except each iteration is executing in its own task and therefore possibly its own thread. The PPL is defined in the system.threading namespace and works across all platforms, Windows, OS X, iOS, Android, as well as both Object Pascal and C++ if you're a C++ builder developer. While the PPL makes multi-threaded app development much easier and more powerful, you still need to deal with inter-thread communication. There's two great techniques to post updates back to the main UI thread that you may not be aware of. The first is tthread.queue and then tthread.synchronize. So any code executing your task or thread can't update the main thread, the main UI, directly. So what you do is you use the tthread.queue or tthread.synchronize to post the updates back. And now the really powerful way you can do this is with an anonymous method where it can do a closure and capture a local variable instance and post that value back to the main thread. Very great way to update your UI from within a task or thread. The difference between queue and thread is that queue allows the main thread to continue to execute, while synchronize requires that the code you're posting back executes immediately. It causes a synchronization to occur. Meanwhile, queued methods are executed eventually. So when the main thread is available, when it's not busy doing something else, then it will execute that method you've posted back, eventually executing all those methods for you. So if you need to update it immediately, use the tthread.synchronize. If you need to update it eventually and want to avoid possibility of a deadlock, use tthread.queue. One thing that's really important about both of these is you do not want to execute them from the main thread, because their purpose is to post back to the main thread. And in that case, you could result in an infinite loop or deadlock where they're trying to post back to themselves. And now here's my interview with Darren. This interview took place in the DevRel studio in the Scotts Valley office just a couple weeks ago. All right, Darren, thanks for joining me today.
Sure.
So, you know, tell us a little bit about what you do here with Embarcadero.
Okay, sure. I'm a developer on the FireMonkey team, and I've been working on FireMonkey pretty much from the beginning of it. I've done a whole bunch of other things for Embarcadero and Delphi over the years.
So how long have you been working on Delphi as a product?
Since I started in 1999, so closing in on 16 years.
Yeah, that's, what was that, Delphi 4, 5 time frame?
It's Delphi 5.
Delphi 5.
Delphi 5 had just shipped when I started.
Okay. Yeah. I remember Delphi 5. So before that, did you use Delphi before that, or were you a Delphi developer? Or?
I was not a Delphi developer. I had used Turbo Pascal.
Okay.
In my college years, I had used Turbo Pascal. That was our learning language at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so I had used Turbo Pascal on CPM on my Apple II.
Okay. And so when you came to work for it at the time, Borland, did you start on the R&D team?
I was on the R&D team. I was on the installer team.
Okay.
And I worked on the product installer for both Delphi and C++ Builder.
Okay. Okay. So that we've seen that actually the installer has gone through quite a bit of changes over the years.
Gone through a lot of changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the first things I worked on was the transition to the Microsoft MSI technology.
Right.
But initially it was, when I started, it was using just Install Shield scripting, and moving on to MSI was one of the things that I worked on. And then when we introduced Kylix, I worked on coming up with the installer for Linux.
Oh, yeah. I remember I was actually surprised to see there was an installer for Linux with Kylix.
I think a lot of people were, yes.
Yeah, just like, oh, wow, I didn't think you could do that in Linux. It was like one of those cross-platform installers, something like that, wasn't it? Or I don't remember what the installer was.
No, it was actually a modification of a open source install tool that was done by, it was originally developed by a game company.
Okay.
And that was the basic install engine that we took and made changes to it and put the changes back in the open source community and used it for installing Kylix.
Okay. As far as your involvement in FireMonkey, where are you at as far as what part of FireMonkey do you work on? It's a pretty big platform.
Yeah, there's a lot of parts of FireMonkey. The piece that I probably work on the most is the integration of FireMonkey on the underlying platform. So how FireMonkey interacts with the OS for Windows, Mac, iOS, Android, sort of the more base levels of FireMonkey like that.
Okay, so it's across all four platforms that you work on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you handle the subtle differences between different platforms so that FireMonkey can behave the same across all platforms?
Sure. The goal of FireMonkey is to let a developer write one piece of code that really runs well on all the platforms. And so to do that, we have to make abstractions of things that exist on the operating system so that developers receive events in a consistent way and they can create controls in a consistent way. So the actual underlying platform is abstracted.
Yeah. That's one thing I like about FireMonkey and actually Delphi before that was in the longest time with Delphi, we could build an application with the VCL and RTL and not have to worry about the Windows OS. But when we needed to get down to the Windows OS, we could always do that. And I think FireMonkey continues with that paradigm and that, you know, we can work at the FireMonkey level and get most of the app done.
Right.
But when we need to, we can reach down and grab an API or talk to the OS or whatever.
Sure. The Delphi compiler and the Delphi RTL is designed to give you access to pretty much everything on the platform. There's really nothing that exists on the platform that there isn't some way to get at through the Delphi compiler and RTL.
Yeah, I think that really helps Delphi kind of fit in its own category as development tools, because you have the platform vendors, which they only going to let you develop for that one platform. They have the cross-platform people that are way higher abstraction level, and Delphi lets you kind of move between both. You have that high abstraction level of FireMonkey and you're able to get down to the OS.
Right, exactly. Yeah, if you look at the other cross-platform technologies that have been done over the years, they usually end up abstracting so much that you can't get to the underlying platform if you want to.
Right.
Or it's very, very difficult to do so. And then, like you said, the tools from the vendor are made to work just with that. You'll never write a Windows program with Xcode or a iOS with Android Studio.
Yeah.
So the vendor tools are all made really for the platform.
Right. And there are some other cross-platform tools that occupy different points along that continuum, but they're all very much at one point. Whereas Delphi lets you move up and down. So now, as far as the JNI bridge and the Objective-C bridge, is that something you've worked on as well or currently are working on?
I'm not currently real active in that. I did work on the initial technology when we first introduced the support for macOS, and we did the first Objective-C bridge. I was involved in developing that technology. Now the RTL team does most of the work for the continuing to translate further API for Mac and iOS, as well as the the Java API from Android, and they've developed a lot of tools that help with that translation too.
Yeah. Now, one thing that's interesting is when I'm writing code to try and expose like something different on multiple platforms, I use a lot of if defs. But I notice when I dive into the FireMonkey code, I don't see if defs. Am I missing the if defs? Are they just well hidden, or is there some other approach that is taken?
We took a different approach. There are a few if defs. If you search through the platform, you'll see that there's a few scattered around. But I made it a goal to try and minimize that. And the way we do that is we have a separate FireMonkey package for every operating system. And so we have, we break up the units in a way that lets us put the right units in the right packages without having to use ifdefs. So if you look at, what's a good example? You look at a unit like, say, the web browser, fmx.webbrowser. You have three different units in Delphi. You've got fmx.webbrowser.pass, which has the general interfaces. That's where the component is defined. That's where any interfaces that are needed are defined. That's really the common piece that's cross-platform. And then you have two platform-specific units. You have fmx.webbrowser.ios and fmx.webbrowser.android. And those have the specific implementations for those platforms. And internally, we have a package for iOS and we have a package for Android. And those packages, they both include the general unit, and then they have just the specific implementation unit that they need. And so if you look at the general unit, fmx.webbrowser, you'll see that there's ifdefs around the uses statement. And that's really where we try to isolate the ifdefs. So that way it will pull in the right implementation for what we need based on the platform.
That makes sense. In what ways do you see maybe differences that you didn't expect between Android and iOS? Or some interesting differences in the platforms as far as integrating with them?
One of the big differences, I think, is just in the paradigm of what native means.
Yeah.
If you look at iOS, ultimately Objective-C code is native. That's what all of Apple's frameworks and libraries are written in C or Objective-C. So when we talk to the native pieces, we're compiling into ARM code, and the ARM code loads or accesses the libraries, and it's very similar to what we've done, you know, from the beginning of Delphi, where we're talking with true native code.
Right.
Whereas on Android, in a lot of ways, native means Java.
Mm-hmm.
There are native libraries that are written in C, mostly in the Linux layer of Android. But a lot of the UI things are actually in Java, and they only exist in Java. So that's kind of just a different paradigm. And that
Android side, you're talking to the Java when you're talking to interfacing the OS, whereas on iOS, you're talking to the native compiled code.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So that as far as like the bridge and stuff like that behaves differently. So,
right. Yeah. In the Delphi Objective-C bridge, it's talking native code to native code. Whereas the JNI bridge, that's used for Android it's using the JNI mechanism for exchanging calls and data between our compiled Delphi code and the JVM, the Dalvik or ART virtual machine on Android.
What were some things that were interestingly similar between the two platforms? Anything, or are they just pretty much different?
No, there's a lot that's similar. Just the overall mechanisms that a lot of the APIs use. There's a lot of similarities in. And a lot of it has to do with just what the functionality is. You just have some functionality that kind of needs to be relatively the same. And on Android, it's written in Java. On iOS, it's written in Objective-C, but the API is relatively similar.
Okay. Yeah. So like web browsers and notifications and stuff like that.
Yeah. Web browsers is, I mean, that's really pretty similar. The API for creating some kind of a web view and then telling it to navigate and go forward and go back. There's a lot of similarities in the API. Notifications are a little bit different, partly because Apple has some different notifications than what Android has. Like, for example, the badge or the icon badges.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, that's something that exists on iOS, but Android doesn't really have the same kind of concept.
Sure.
And that's something where when we were developing our abstractions for these, one thing that a lot of cross-platform tools have made or a decision that they've done over the years is you kind of get a lowest common denominator. So that if all platforms don't support something, then they can't do it.
Right.
And so notifications is kind of a good example of how FireMonkey is a little different than some of those, because we really don't want to do just the lowest common denominator. We want to be able to expose the functionality that exists. And so we're able to do that through interfaces and through platform services where a component like the Notification Center component can ask the operating system, do you support this feature? And if it does, then like in the case of notification for badge icons, we can set the badge icon. If not, then it just kind of handles that situation gracefully.
Right.
So that way we can expose the extra functionality of a platform and still have cross-platform code.
Sure. And then as an application developer on top of that, I can then look at those same services and decide, oh, am I displaying a badge to the user or not?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Now, if in the case of badges, actually, the Samsung has badge support on their launcher, whereas other Android launchers don't have that. There might be some others. Is there a way that in the future that could be added into Notification Center to differentiate that? Or because like Samsung has like half the Android marketplace, so which I found surprising.
Right. Yeah, and Samsung is huge in the Android world. That's something that probably could be done. I have not done any research myself on what the API is that Samsung uses.
Right.
But that's something that's definitely a Samsung extension onto Android. That's not part of the standard Google pure Android mechanism. And so most likely that API is available. It's a matter of finding it and then making the abstraction for it and basically being able to do a test to see if the runtime device is a Samsung device that supports this API, then go ahead and enable it and make the calls.
Yeah. So I guess the important question, though, is do you have a preference between Android and iOS?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I probably shouldn't answer that one. My personal device is an iPhone.
Personal device is an iPhone?
Yeah.
I had an iPhone for the longest time, and up through iPhone 4, and when iPhone 5 was announced, I was underwhelmed, and I switched to Android. And I've used Android since then, and I had a Galaxy S3, and now I've got the Note 3. And I like Android quite a bit, but I still like iPhone. I still like using the iPads.
Yeah.
But it's certainly interesting. I see there definitely are pros and cons to both.
Right. Yeah, I've used Android quite a bit. You know, certainly in the process of developing FireMonkey, I use Android a lot. And there are a lot of nice things in the Android devices and the Android ecosystem. And in a lot of ways, Apple keeps things really, really locked down. There's pros and cons to that. Android gives you a little bit more openness to do different things. There's pros and cons to both of them. It really depends what it is that you're looking to do.
Yeah. Well, and you know, like we just talked about, half the devices have, Android devices have badges because they're Samsung devices, and half of them don't.
Right. Exactly.
So, you know, that's nice that you can have badges, but it's a bummer that not all of them do. So,
right. Yeah.
So what do you enjoy doing when you're not, working?
When I'm not working, you know, living here in the Bay Area, there's no shortage of things to do. One of my favorite hobbies is mountain biking.
Oh, yeah.
And here in the Santa Cruz Mountains, there's just endless places to go and do that. So mountain biking and hiking and things like that.
Very cool. Do you find places where your software development crosses over into your hobby of mountain biking and climbing and such?
Not particularly.
Okay. Developed an app for mountain biking.
I have not developed an app myself for it. There's several apps that I do use for photography and for trail guides and navigation and things like that. There's apps that I do use for it, but I haven't developed any myself.
I always find I feel the need to develop apps for everything I do.
Yeah.
I don't always necessarily do that, but I always feel like I need to. Okay. So what are you excited about for the far future for Delphi? Not obviously nothing that's coming in a near release, but just some big ideas that you think would be neat to see Delphi and go in that direction.
Well, I'm always pretty excited about some of the changes that are being made to the Delphi language. You know, if I look back at the Turbo Pascal that I wrote in my college days and compare that to Delphi now, you know, ostensibly they're still Pascal languages, but they're worlds apart.
Yeah.
And the capabilities that are added to the Delphi language is, that's really exciting to see. And going forward, you know, there's all kinds of things that could happen in that front that are really exciting and make software development so much easier.
Yeah. It's interesting because we just got the new parallel language library for Delphi.
Right.
Well, in Delphi and C++ Builder both. But
yeah.
It was an extension as a library instead of as a language feature.
Right.
So it's always interesting to see. A while ago, I was thinking about what is the difference between the language and the standard library that comes with the language.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a blurry line anymore, really.
It is kind of a blurry line. And, you know, I read some of the reports that our C++ compiler team sends out about the standards meetings that they attend.
Right.
And, you know, they have the group that's working on the language itself and the group that's working on the library features. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, Delphi has a similar approach. There's actual core language features and there's the library. And a lot of the functionality that you would think would have to be a compiler feature or a language feature is actually something that's really implemented in the library.
Right. Yeah. So like, was it 2009, we saw anonymous message and generics as language features.
Right.
But then there's also the library supports that as well because we added the generic collections and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah.
And so then the advantage of with the parallel programming being a library is that it can be used across C++ and Delphi both.
Yes.
And it seems like, I mean, I'm trying to think if there's a place where it's lacking not having a language feature. It seems like it's pretty much able to do whatever you'd want to with it.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And being able to make use of a feature like that in FireMonkey is something that's pretty exciting for the framework. And probably the best way to wring more power out of devices is by introducing more parallel processing.
Yeah.
Virtually every device now has a multi-core processor. And the pace of just raw megahertz increases seems to be kind of behind us. You know, for years, it was all increasing more and more megahertz in each CPU. And then they kind of plateaued.
Yeah,
and now it's adding more cores. You know, almost all desktop machines have at least four cores now, And it's becoming the same way on mobile as well. You know, pretty much every phone is at least dual core, if not four or more. Yep. And so being able to really make use of that horsepower to parallel processing is probably one of the most exciting things that I see coming in the future.
Yeah. And I always tell people when it comes to mobile devices, the parallel library lets you do things like asynchronous tasks to improve responsiveness.
Right.
But you probably don't want to use parallel for loops because those are drain the battery faster.
Yeah.
You can for short times, but you definitely want to be aware of that you're could use up a lot of battery quickly.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that it's sort of learning a new way of programming. It's there's things that it makes no sense to put in parallel because you have one core doing all the work and three others sitting there waiting on it. And so right. that's not really helping the situation any.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Darren.
Sure.
And I'll talk to you later.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the podcast at Delphi.org. And thanks again to Phil Smith, who composed our theme music. I want to let you know about Delphi Week. Starting Monday, February 9th, so next week, all week long through the 13th, Friday with the 13th, is the celebration, online celebration, Delphi Week. This is going to be taking place live from the Scotts Valley office. We're going to have lots of great information about Delphi. So Code Rage is a more technical online conference. This is going to be technical as well as just a celebration of all things Delphi, the Delphi community, the technology, where Delphi's come from, where Delphi's going, etc. We've got a lot of exciting things planned. We've been working on this for a while, trying to make this a really big, memorable event. So if you're at all interested in Delphi, you're going to want to take part in this, and make sure you tell all your friends as well, because they won't want to miss this. It's going to be a great celebration about all things Delphi, as well as the usual content we have of skill sprints and stuff like that. So make sure you check that out. You can find more information on my blog at Delphi.org, or go to community.embarcadero.com and look for the news article on Delphi Week. I look forward to seeing you all online next week, and as we celebrate all things Delphi.